Just last week, a man who's a very good friend of the head of casting for OOF asked me to sit at his table. And he's... Oh! Oh, come on. Come on.
Junk food supper.
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 Junk food
supper.
Junk food supper.
Junk food supper.
Junk food supper.
Junk food supper.
Junk food supper.
Junk food supper.
Junk food supper. Junk food supper.
Junk food supper. Welcome to Junk Food Supper. This is the podcast where we get together pretty much every week and we talk about weird movies from the video stores and the cable TV and all over the internet. Things like that. I am Parker, joined as always by Sean Byron in Los Angeles. Sean Byron, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right, but actually I want to start off this episode not by talking about a movie, but talking about a TV show, if you can believe it. And the show is The Floor. Are you watching The Floor, Mr. Bowman?
I've never even heard of The Floor.
All right, we're done talking about it then.
All right. What is
all
The Floor?
I wanted to talk about it was whether or not you were watching it.
Okay. What is it? What's going on with it? Is it about floors?
Well, it is about, well, it's about one floor. It's about the titular floor that's in the title. It's also about Rob Lowe and his struggle with aging circa 2024.
Okay.
It's a game show. It actually has nothing to do with Rob Lowe's aging, except for the fact that he just looks old suddenly. And I was surprised by that, but it's a game show. It's one of those kind of like high concept game shows where they spent a bunch of money on a set, which in this case is this like big floor that lights up. You don't know about this?
I don't know anything about it. I like these high concept game shows, though. Like, I was a big Deal or No Deal fan.
Yeah, it's pretty dumb. It's very dumb. It's maybe one of the dumbest things I've ever seen in my life. Mm-hmm. But I started watching it because it seemed like one of those kind of water cooler shows. People at my office were talking about it and stuff like that. And so I've been watching it. I can't say that I'm loving it. I think it's an interesting show. But if you ain't seen it yet, I got really nothing more to say.
Okay. What channel is it on? Some weird channel?
It's on the Hulu.
Oh, okay. That's not weird at all. I know that channel.
Yeah. It's a little bit weird, Hulu.
Well, yeah.
It's like, is this a Disney service? Is it a Fox service? I guess it's both. I guess there's no distinction between those anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. They're putting all the, like, the Disney Marvel shows on Hulu now. Like, yeah, it's basically just the same thing.
Yeah, they're putting Poor Things on Disney Plus.
Well, that's weird.
It's very weird.
I'll have to watch it at some point.
I can't believe that of all the Lady Frankenstein movies that have come out in the past 6 months, of all of them, you haven't seen that one? I mean, that's the cream of the crop for Lady Frankenstein movies.
Well, you know, I've got my own MO. You know, I root for the underdog. I go see the hidden gem Lady Frankenstein movies. You know, I'm not seeing all this mainstream stuff that you guys are out there watching, your Oscar movies. I'm seeing that underground stuff.
Yeah, you're more into the asylum versions of Lady Frankenstein's.
Mm-hmm. I like the Lady Frankenstein's where the main characters listen to like Morrissey and stuff like that. Like that's really my sweet spot. There's probably no Morrissey in Poor Things.
Yeah. Very little. Ironically, because you would think that there would be more. You see, but there's less. You see?
I see what you're saying.
Yeah. Can't recommend The Floor, though. Yeah. It's very dumb.
Okay. Well, I like dumb stuff. I'll check it out.
People are watching it. You could be in that club of people that are watching it and then be tuned into the conversation.
Okay. Speaking of dumb stuff, I saw something that was tremendously stupid.
Yeah?
And I was stupid for even going to go see it.
Let me guess.
Yeah.
Was it, did you potentially happen to see the spec script that I wrote and have posted to the internet for an all-female Ernest P. Worrell film that I'm calling Hernest? Is that what you saw?
I sadly did not see that. That would actually be better than what I saw.
Yeah, it's Hernest. It's going to be big. Trying to get Kate McKinnon on board. We'll see.
She would be the perfect Hernest.
Don't you think?
Yeah, she'd be great.
Yeah. Anyways, what stupid thing did you see, if not Hernest?
I saw the all-female Spider-Man as a baby movie, Madame Web.
Oh, Spider-Man as a psychic lady movie? Is that what that is?
Yeah.
What is Madame Web even?
It's a prequel to Spider-Man where Spider-Man's uncle's co-worker gets magic powers and forms a superhero league with three women who have no superpowers. It's fucking stupid. Yeah, it's
Didn't we all say that we wanted something different from these superhero movies, that they were all just kind of the same thing? At least this is not the same movie again, right?
It is different. I mean, it is kind of like the same in that it's just a superhero origin story for, but like the twist is that like you don't actually get the superheroes. Like it's like act one of like a superhero origin story. Like there are no superheroes in it. Like the ladies, spoiler alert, I guess here, although everybody already knows this because everybody's been talking shit about this movie. Like the four spider women don't actually get their powers in it. And the only time you see them like in costume doing superhero stuff is in a dream sequence of the future.
What?
Yeah. So it's like act one of an origin story. It's the most insane thing ever. So it is different in that it just offers you a sliver of what most other superhero movies offer you. And it's like, I mean, it is different. It's like kind of like a Final Destination superhero movie where it's like a lady can see the future and then she's being chased by an evil Spider-Man and she has to get away. I don't know. So it's a little bit different, but it's very bad. Remarkably bad.
Man, at times like these, I have never felt more regret than I do now about the fact that I selected The Lobster for this show. That could be the only explanation as to why you're watching Madame Web instead of streaming Poor Things at home.
Well, that did hurt. That did hurt Poor Things' chances, that second half of The Lobster.
Man, if only I had picked Killing of a Sacred Deer instead.
I think you're probably right. But you know, I mean, I am contractually obligated to see all the Spider-Man movies, you know. I'm a Marvel's man. I got to see them all. So there's like 2 seconds of baby Spider-Man being born in the movie. So I had to see it.
Is this now the worst Marvel movie, or is it that that Benedict Cumberbatch one that people hated?
Oh, no, those Cumberbatch ones are good. People like those. People like those Doctor Stranges.
Really? I thought one of those people hated.
Well, people generally like the first one, but people, they're kind of split on the second one, I guess. Like, a lot of little kids hate the second one. That's the one that Sam Raimi directed. Because they're like, why is this a horror movie? And it's like, because fucking Sam Raimi directed it, bro. Like, so that's kind of why people hate that one. But, like, the Marvel, like, Captain Marvel's is very hated. The Eternals is very hated. There are some very hated ones out there, though. I would say that, I mean, this is like probably the worst superhero movie I've ever seen. And I've seen Steel.
Wow.
Yeah, like it's very bad. It's like remarkably bad. Like nobody in the movie is like trying, like nobody like emotes or like has any emotion, like our acting ability. Like everything in it's dumb. Like, nothing makes sense. It's like so anticlimactic. Like most of the movie is like them hiding from the bad guy in the woods and like talking about Britney Spears. Like it's like just, it's like bafflingly stupid and bad.
Well, speaking of comic book movies with bad acting, you know, I noticed this past week the Criterion Channel put up that category for Razzie-nominated movies, and one of the Razzie-nominated movies that they got streaming right now is Barbed Wire. Mm-hmm. So I streamed that thing. When's the last time you watched Barbed Wire?
Sometime within the time I've gotten letterboxed. So in the last 10 or 12 years or whatever. But before that, it was probably like when it first came out. But
yeah, it was a video store favorite for me, but I hadn't seen it, you know, since the video store days. And I'm thinking, this will be cool. It's got pixels now. And it does have pixels now. And that part of it was cool. I just forgot that, you know, Pam Anderson cannot act like whatsoever in that movie. And they like cut around her in most of the scenes that she's in, where it's like for her lines of dialogue, it's like ADR and the camera's pointed at somebody else, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But kind of cool to see it, you know, with pixels still.
Yeah. I'd imagine that those boobs look pretty good with pixels. And that's like, you know, I mean, that's like why the movie was made.
Yeah, that's what you're paying for. I noticed at the same time that there's a handful of other kind of barbed wire-y type movies that Pam Anderson did like within a year or so of Barbed Wire on either direction, including one directed by David A. Pryor.
Oh, yeah.
And I might check out some of these lower budget barbed wire ripoffs.
Yeah, I've never seen that one. It's been on my secret to-do on Junk Food Dinner list on Letterboxd for a long time, that one.
Oh, not so secret no more.
I spilled the beans.
Speaking of secrets, should we let people in on our secret music league antics that we've been enjoying over the past day?
Oh, of course. We got to get more people in there. I don't know why my friend Chris Korn isn't in there. I tagged him in everything. I figured he would have fun with it. He's a very big music guy. He enjoys the music. But yeah, it's very fun so far. I'm liking it. I never heard of this stuff until the other day.
Yeah, likewise. I feel like we were on the outside. You know, people had this secret pastime they weren't sharing with us. And I'm glad that we got looped in because Music League, it turns out, a lot of fun. This sounds like paid content right here, but it's not. Nobody's paying me to promote Music League. I believe you can find it on musicleague.com or wherever you download your apps.
Yeah, it's join us in the Discord if you're not already. There's links out there. Just message us or email us, or if you can't find it, it's on the Patreon. Actually, if you sign up for the Patreon, you go to patreon.com/junkfooddinner. You automatically get put into the Discord. So that's probably the easiest way to do it. But the link is on there. And yeah, in music chat, we've been going crazy for this stuff. It's very fun. You like each person in the league picks a song for a certain category. It makes a playlist. You listen to the playlist. You vote on the songs. You comment on the songs, how you felt about them. It's very good. It's very good. Nobody's beat me up for picking Sky yet. So that's that's good. Very tolerant group we've got.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a struggle so far for me to not like play the role of agent of chaos and just pick like Japanese noise metal tracks, you know, for all my picks so far. But it's been fun to see what people submit, and the comments after the rounds are pretty funny.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that was fun. I didn't realize that was a thing. Although I guess I should have, because I commented on some when I was doing them. But yeah, I didn't know that it like showed you after all the voting was over, and those comments were fun. A lot of people were aghast. There's like some song from like the 20s where this lady says all this like lewd shit about cum, and like I think the song is about the song is called like Shave It Clean or something, but a lot of the lyrics are about nipples, so I don't know if she's shaving her nipples or not. That's what the song's about. I didn't listen too closely. But a lot of the comments about how lewd, surprisingly lewd, that song was were fun, because it was written by a lady who's probably at this point 140 years old.
Yeah, you would have to imagine. That was definitely the highlight of that first round for me, which was turned out to be a fun round, the Happy Nude Year round. I enjoyed it. A lot of saucy picks.
Yeah. Have you thought about what categories we're going to have after this game, for the next game?
Probably mostly Fred Astaire-based categories, you know? songs to tap dance to, songs to listen to while you watch other people tap dance, you know, things like this.
I'm going to pick
about
Fred,
tap dancing.
I'm going to pick Fred, A Stairway to Heaven.
That's not allowed.
No, that's...
No. We respect the Wayne's World Guitar Center policy.
Oh, no. You're the second person to deny me with that Wayne's World reference in 1 week.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Justin did it too. When I asked him to play my Last Serbian Virgin video before Spookies at the Esquire Theater in Cincinnati on March 22nd.
Well, at this rate, you're never going to join the shitty Beatles.
I know. It's a real shame.
They kind of suck, so it's fine.
That's what I've heard. It's not just a clever name.
Correct. One more footnote, though, on Music League. I will say there's one person who hasn't submitted on this round, and I'm not going to point out who that person is. It's their own prerogative. You know what? Life is busy. Life is hectic. You got things to do. I understand. Maybe you're commuting still at this late hour. It's kind of unbelievable, but there must be some reason why you haven't dropped everything to submit your picks for this round of Music League. And just know, I understand. I fully get it.
I don't understand. I think we should all be picking our songs and listening to the playlist just as soon as possible.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you say that because every pick so far from you has been the shitty Beatles, and it's pretty easy.
I've put in their entire discography.
Some of us have to really, you know, dig through the crates over here, Bowman.
Well, that's true. I'm gonna go with, it's just shitty Beatles and Ween for me. That's all I'm gonna pick.
Maybe a collab between the two?
That could work. I actually
Ween at the Speed of Sound. Is that anything?
I was actually thinking, I was like, man, Justin and Sean are both in this. Like, if I pick a bunch of Angelo Badalamenti songs, I'm gonna win. So, like, I was thinking about playing just to win for a minute, but I was like, nah, I can't do that.
You gotta follow your heart.
Yeah,
you know,
gotta follow your heart.
It's really easy to just try and cater to what people want, you know, especially as we get deeper into this and I see some of the selections that people make for the first couple rounds. Like, I could then start trying to find what's the happy medium between all these choices, but it's more fun to just play whatever random crap that I like, you know?
Yeah, I think that's the way to do it.
Well, should we then find out what is the way to do our first segment on the show?
I think so. I would love to know about this segment.
All right. Well, this is a segment that we trot out from time to time when, I guess, a lack of inspiration strikes us and we got no better ideas, but to look at what's coming out in movie theaters this month. And so we'll be doing it now for March of 2024. Pretty exciting, right?
Yeah, I like movies.
Do you like marches?
I do.
Like Sherman's March, or you a big Sherman's March guy? That seems like it's your kind of march.
Yeah, Sherman's one of my favorite marchers, of course.
Yeah.
Maybe is the only march I know about.
He's the Trail of Tears guy, right? Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah.
It's not a good march. But
yeah, I mean, I guess you're right.
But this might be a good march, 2024. You know, as we record, we're a little bit into the first week already, but we might as well just talk about what came out this past weekend in theaters. The big one being Dune: Part 2. Did you see this Dune?
I did not, but everybody likes it and it did really well. So I don't know. I think even people who didn't like the first one like this one. So that gives me hope, I guess. I'll eventually see it.
Do you think that you will see it in theaters now? Did that like flip your perspective on going out to see this?
I think I was always going to go see it in the theater because I just can't count out my man, Denis. He made, Blade Runner, which we talked about recently, which I like a great deal. And he made Enemy, which is Magnifique, and Arrival, of course, is Magnifique. So I can't count them out. So I probably would have seen it anyway, but now I'm a little bit more not scared of seeing it.
Okay, I see how it is. I feel like you were playing a little bit more coy when Kevin Moss was on the line last time we recorded with him, where you were maybe saying, oh no, I'm not the kind of guy that would ever go see this Dune Part 2 crap.
Well, I mean, that first one just really sucks really bad, you know? But
yeah,
you know, so like, so I don't know. I mean, I am a little torn, I guess. I mean, I like the director. I think he's capable of good stuff, but I feel like maybe I hated the first movie, and also I feel like I just don't like Dune. Like, I don't know, sandworms and shit I don't really give a shit about. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know that I'll like this. I don't have optimism for it, but I'll see it.
Yeah. I was pretty opposed to this. You know, I also hated that first movie. Had pretty much no enthusiasm for this, but something did change in me as well. When I saw the reaction online, I saw how much people were loving this, and I started to feel like I don't want to be left out of the cultural conversation. You know, I don't want to be that guy putting in a protest vote and not seeing Dune Part 2. So I rewatched the first one. I think that was also on Hulu, that weird channel, Hulu. Mm-hmm. And I gotta say, man, still sleepy in terms of it's still a sleepy ass movie where nothing happens and I was fucking bored as all hell. And I watched this like 3 days ago. I'm still sleepy now. So I don't know. It didn't make me any more excited to see it. But I think I will cave and probably end up seeing it theatrically because, again, I just don't want to miss out. And it seems like, you know, if I am going to see this, I should try to see it on the biggest possible screen. Unfortunately, I was looking around at IMAX screenings for this. It's like sold out in LA for like weeks now. So it could be a little while before I get to see it. So I probably won't cave and just see this on some regular ass screen.
Yeah. That's another thing about this is it's a big movie. You probably got to see it on a big screen. Yeah. See those sandworms on the big screen.
Were there any other releases this past week that looked interesting?
Not really. I think everybody made way for Dune 2, knowing that it was going to make a lot of money, because it doesn't look like... I don't think any of these other ones are even real.
There's a horror movie called Amelia's Children.
Yeah, I never heard of this. It came out limited release.
Coming at you from Magnolia Pictures.
Mm-hmm.
About a search for a biological family in Portugal. Sounds pretty scary.
But I don't know what all those movies are. But on March 6th, we got a re-release of Labyrinth. Thanks to our men over at Fathom Events. God bless those men.
Yeah. Well, but that's not the only thing that Fathom Events has going on this week. Because March 2nd, they're putting out... But this is a new release, right? Does Fathom do new releases as well?
They do for theater productions, yeah.
But that's not what this is, I don't think, right?
Isn't it?
So we've got Jean Dubarry... starring Johnny Depp, the life of a seamstress or something? Seamster?
Yeah. Sometimes they do like really like niche movies that are new. I think Fathom put out like Clerks 3 and stuff like that. So yeah, sometimes they do new stuff if it's like super limited release stuff.
Okay. Well...
which I suppose a Johnny Depp movie would be after all the craziness in his life. You can't really release a Johnny Depp movie wide anymore, I don't think.
I can't even fathom somebody trying to release this wide.
Ah, okay.
49% on Rotten Tomatoes, so not very good.
Yeah.
It is a shitty Beetle, it turns out. Mm-hmm. What else?
Do you ever see these Fathom Events? Are you going to see Labyrinth?
I've seen Labyrinth theatrically before. It's a good time. I mean, speaking of musicals, it's got one of the best soundtracks for any musical movie ever, I would say. Chilly Down. I love that track with the those like fire demon guys. What a great song.
Yeah. Those guys are scary as fuck, but their song is good.
Yeah, they got that devilish smile that we all love where they just look fucking unhinged. But I love those guys.
Yeah.
So those guys are maybe. Scary. Yeah, maybe. Probably not, okay. But I could see myself doing it.
Yeah. I think I would have to drive to Fresno to see this. I would like to. It actually just played here at like a small independent theater in Fresno like 2 weeks ago and I missed it. So I feel like this is the universe giving me another chance. So I probably should go see it.
Well, speaking of music, there's a documentary coming out the following week that I didn't know was a thing that was happening, but sounds really interesting to me because it's about a kind of music that I started listening to within the past, I don't know, year or so and have been getting into, Calypso. Documentary is called One Hand Don't Clap. And it's a documentary look at Calypso, mostly through conversation and the performances of two singers from Trinidad and Tobago, Lord Kitchener and Calypso Rose. I guess Lord Kitchener is still alive. He's about 70 years old or so. So that'll be cool to hear from one of these old timers who's probably seen it all. Yeah, if you're into Calypso, check out One Hand Don't Clap.
I remember in second grade in music class, we played a Calypso song. That's pretty much all I know about the genre.
You've heard the Beetlejuice soundtrack. You know all about Calypso.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, I guess you're right. I guess that's true.
Yeah, you could learn more via this doc.
Well, what I want to learn more about on March 8th is the movie Love Lies Bleeding, which I'm sure you've seen the trailer for because I've seen it about 100 times because it's in front of every movie that's out and it's constantly popping up on my YouTube. It's a kind of a neo-noir sort of a film with Kristen Stewart and Dave Franco and a lady with big muscles, and it looks good. It looks like some of that True Romance, Bonnie and Clyde type of stuff, you know? I think it looks great. I think it'll be good. I hear it's good. Have you seen the trailer? Do you know about this?
I'm not sure if I have seen this trailer. It's possible. But what I am sure that I have seen is all of the red carpet photos of Kristen Stewart that came out either today or yesterday or something. I've seen those and I've seen those many times. And I will see this movie. I like her and I like a neo-noir.
Yeah, it's an A24 movie. They're usually pretty good over there. They got good movies.
Speaking of movies, I noticed that Universal is trying to pull off another Super Mario here. And I gotta say, I mean, I praise them for trying. And I guess you could have, theoretically, you could have picked a more obscure video game character. But does anybody really think that Rayman's big movie is going to be a success?
I don't think so. When was the last time a Rayman video game came out? I feel like 15 years, 20 years?
Let's see. Let us see. I mean, there's all these weird spin-offs that I don't even know if they count, you know, where it's like Rayman plus Rabbids plus Super Mario.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I don't know much about the Rayman.
According to Wikipedia, yeah, they just mostly re-release the old games constantly onto new systems. That's basically how he lives. Rayman Raving Rabbids came out in 2006. Mario and Rabbids Spark of Hope 2022. I think that, yeah, that was his most recent.
Well, let's be fair to Rayman, because EGM did give an 8 out of 10 to the Jaguar version of his game.
Okay.
It's probably the highest rated Jaguar game, according to EGM.
Okay, well, I guess that could be good. There's no synopsis here on Box Office Mojo, so that leads me to believe maybe this is not even a real movie.
Yeah, that's a fair assumption.
But what is real, or maybe isn't, is this movie imaginary? A new spooky movie from Lionsgate about an imaginary friend that is like a serial killer. Little kid has an imaginary friend, like an imaginary bear, and it may or may not kill people. I've seen this trailer a bunch of times too. It looks spooky, and I'm going to see it. Have you seen this trailer?
I did not see the trailer, but this guy was on another podcast promoting it, and his name didn't ring a bell, Jeff Wadlow. And so I looked up what else this guy has directed, and I think his biggest success so far was Kick-Ass 2.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then a lot of movies I looked, I don't know, like they were not my speed. But I mean, I like a horror movie. If this is good and I hear this is good, I might be into it, but I have not heard that yet.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, it looks like this guy makes a lot of dog shit movies. He also made Truth or Dare, which is really bad, but I think has a cool ending. And Fantasy Island, which is a horror movie remake of the old TV show, and it fucking sucked. So maybe I won't be seeing this movie. Maybe this movie's going to suck pretty bad.
Yeah, he also made Cry underscore Wolf, one of the very few movies to have an underscore in its title. I challenge you to name another one.
I don't think I can. I'm sure there's like probably some movie from 1998 about hackers that has an underscore.
Yeah, this is 2005, so it maybe it was made in 98 and just held over.
Yeah.
What else is coming out? Maybe we should jump ahead a week. See what's going on. Jump okay. Right past this Fathom event called 47 Days with Jesus.
Okay, yeah. I'd party with Jesus for 47 days.
Oh, the Remembering Gene Wilder, I'm guessing, documentary. I would be surprised if this was a biopic. Is coming out from Kino Lorber on March 15th. That might be good.
Yeah, yeah. I like that guy.
To be fair, though, this seems like the kind of thing that I will just add to my streaming bookmark list and then never actually get around to watching. I think I've had the Gilda Radner one saved on whatever streamer that's on for 5 years or whatever. And there's that Belushi one, too, that I keep meaning to get around to. They're making a lot of these.
True.
What are you looking at, that Snack Shack?
I was kind of considering it. I don't know what this is, but it's, let's see. In Nebraska City in 1991, two best friends get the chance to run the swimming pool Snack Shack that later comes to be the perfect scenario for transgression, fun, personal discovery, and romance. So yeah, somehow somebody made a 1984 sex comedy and it's getting released today, it looks like. I mean, I'm assuming it has like that sex comedy poster to it, you know, like the wacky colors and silliness. So who knows? It's a good name, though. I was looking at this Arthur the King movie, which is about Mark Wahlberg has some sort of dog. The trailer for this pops up on YouTube all the time. And little Gonzo, he hates it when other dogs are on the TV and he barks at the TV when they pop up. So I hate this movie because it's constantly riling him up. So I will not be seeing it.
That's funny. Speaking of documentaries, there's another music doc about Ryuichi Sakamoto, the keyboard player from Yellow Magic Orchestra, who I think just featured in one of the Music League games I was playing earlier today. But I love YMO. I love Ryuichi. There's another documentary called Coda, came out a few years ago that I saw and really enjoyed, which was kind of about his life and him dealing with a cancer. I think it was a cancer diagnosis that he got. And this new one apparently is his basically his final concert. It's him playing piano. you know, the last time before he died. So probably not very uplifting, but if you're a fan of YMO and you want to get a chance to hear Ryuichi Sakamoto play the keys one last time, this is how you do it. And you can do it theatrically.
Okay. I don't know who that guy is. So I'll leave this one to you.
You know who this guy is. You've heard the Beetlejuice soundtrack.
Well, all right. You got me there. You got me there.
Prey? It's a movie called Prey that is not the Predator sequel or prequel.
With Mina Suvari and Ryan Felipe, a young couple is compelled to leave their Christian missionary station in the Kalahari Desert after being threatened with death by an extremist militant gang. After crashing their aircraft, they must battle man and beast for their lives. That sounds pretty schlocky. That's kind of my alley. I could probably see that.
I would have preferred that they land in the Mon Calamari Desert with that fish man from Star Wars.
Well, they don't fly over there. Everybody knows they're flying near there. It's a trap, you know. That's how they
get you. Fair enough. It is a trap. Emil Hirsch also in this. Not my favorite Hirsch. I'm more of a Judd guy.
Yeah, Judd's the best.
Al Pacino's got something going on with Michael Keaton called Knox Goes Away. There are movies coming out. For some reason, I thought 2024 would be just a complete wasteland of no movies, but there's some movies here, right? These are films.
These are films, yeah. Yeah, technically.
What's this Exuma? This Korean movie with... what's his face in it? What's this? Is this going to be something good?
A shaman is offered a large amount of money to move a tomb. He moves with his companion, Ji Guan. So,
okay. All right. It's got Choi Min-sik, the dude from Old Boy, in it.
Okay. I've still never seen Old Boy. You refuse to pick it on the show.
You've still never seen Old Boy? Or have you seen only the Spike Lee one?
I have seen the Spike Lee one, yeah.
So you effectively ruined the experience for yourself. Because, spoiler alert, you've been spoiled.
I have been spoiled, yeah. Sadly.
I don't know why.
I watched it. I think it was like just on one day. Like I was like flipping through the channels and it was just coming on. So I was like, yeah, all right. I really fucked up.
You fucked up. Well, the end of Evangelion's coming out March 17th. G-Kid's putting this back in theaters. Or maybe for the first time. I guess it probably didn't play American theaters back in the day.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't think so. I think all those remakes have been in American theaters, but probably not this. So, yeah, I would like to see this. I'll go check this out. I think it's playing in Fresno.
Yeah, go drop a bunch of acid, let your brain explode into the aisles of your local multiplex with the end of Evangelion. That sounds like a pretty good time.
That's actually not a bad idea. Let's see, when is the 17th?
Yeah, I'm a fan of Japanese movies.
I might just do that.
Because Roger will be there with you.
Mm-hmm. Let's see, on March 21st, Rad is getting a re-release. The Lori Loughlin film that I believe we reviewed on the show a million years ago.
The
story of Crew Jones, who has the intensity and desire to win a BMX race called the Hell Track.
Yeah, sponsored by Mongoose, who look like villains in the movie for some reason.
Yeah, it seems like a weird movie to get a re-release. It Fathom's putting it out. Seems... I don't know. I would think that might be a little too obscure for Fathom, but I guess not.
Yeah, actually, because I think I remember hearing for a long time this movie was actually very difficult for even like repertory theaters to screen because I think Talia Shire owns the rights somehow and she was just like not approving its screening anywhere. So maybe whatever issues Talia had, maybe it was, you know, fallout with the Mongoose Corporation. I guess that's all been resolved.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I wonder if they would have had to have shelled out new money to Mongoose to like re-release it or something. Or if they wanted Mongoose to shell out more money to re-release it, or yeah, maybe that was a holdup.
Yeah. Or maybe Mongoose was threatening to sue. So you guys made us look like villains. Which, you know, it is the name of one of our bicycles, but we in fact are not villains ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Your homeboy, David Dastmalchian, if I'm saying that properly, is coming out with something in March 22nd.
Yeah, Late Night with the Devil, which just got a new trailer today, but I haven't watched it because the first trailer hooked me, and I don't want spoilers, but have you seen anything about this? Do you know about this?
I know the premise, but I have avoided the trailer.
Okay. Yeah, the premise is that it's like a 1970s talk show, and a guy talks to somebody, the host talks to somebody who's like possessed, and I think the whole movie is just like the episode, and spooky things start happening on the television show. And it's like shot like it's, you know, very 70s-y aesthetically and whatnot. Kind of like sort of
what's that, Ghost Watch or something that
yeah,
we watched?
Yeah, like Ghost Watch or like WNUF kind of has those vibes, although it's like kind of more narrative. But yeah, I think this is gonna be a banger. I'm very excited for this.
Yeah. If you know, if you were gonna cast a sweaty late night host who is dealing with like psychological horrors, David D, I think, is your guy, right? I'm assuming he's going to be the late night host and not the possessed guest.
Yeah, he is the host.
Yeah. I'm there. Sign me up.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think it'll be playing around here. I'll probably have to rent it, I guess, but still very exciting.
Are you excited for You Can Call Me Bill? I know you're a Trexman, so this Star Trek documentary about Bill Shatner, that's going to be 96 minutes of enjoyment for you, I think.
I feel like this is like the 32nd documentary about William Shatner and his life as a Star Trek man. So I don't know what that makes this one any different from all the others.
Well, this is the one that includes his reflections on what it was like to spend $10 million to go to space with Elon Musk or whatever the hell happened there, Jeff Bezos.
Oh, yeah, he did do that.
So you get to hear him cry about how, you know, things are so desolate up there. Oh, it's so sad to reflect on the planet as I burn billions of dollars in technology upon reentry.
Yeah. I mean, good for him, though. He's like 92 years old or something. So,
yeah, we're proud of him.
Yeah.
Although, good for him. Inside word is that Stanley Kubrick faked his spacewalk.
That I believe.
Yeah. Sydney Sweeney coming out with something.
That's what I was going to mention.
She's a hot property now, right?
Yeah, she's actually in that Madame Web movie. She's probably the least worst thing about it. Usually I like her a lot. She's on Euphoria, and she was in this like romantic comedy that came out earlier this year called Anyone But You, which is a modern day Shakespeare. It's a Much Ado About Nothing that I thought was very charming. So yeah, I like her. So this looks kind of like generic. It's about like a nun who's like being chased by ghosts or something like that. Let's see. Cecilia, a woman of devout faith, is warmly welcomed to the picture-perfect Italian countryside, where she is offered a new role at an illustrious convent, but it becomes clear to Cecilia that her new home harbors dark and horrifying secrets. Kind of generic, but I don't know. I might check it out.
All right. I feel like we've had enough nun-based horror. Right?
Yeah, there's a lot.
Nobody's even Christian anymore, and now's the time that we get all this nun-based horror?
Yeah.
Shit should have came out in the 1600s when it mattered, you know?
I agree.
There's, speaking of documentaries, I guess I'm attracted to these documentaries, but I just saw one coming out March 29th, and yes, I am skipping right over Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, because I don't give a shit, but there's a documentary on the Adamant that is a French language documentary film about a floating structure called La Adamant Daycare, or not daycare, Day Center, located on the Seine River in Paris. The structure is a special daycare center for the treatment of adults with mental disorders. So it's kind of like a funny farm, I guess, to put it insensitively, that's on this floating barge, you know, right there in Paris on the Seine River. That sounds like an interesting setting for a documentary. I'd like to know why they're floating this loony bin on the edge of their city. Who knows, you know, maybe it could be ghoulish, you know, in the way that Titty Cut Follies were, but I'm guessing probably not. It's probably going to be heartwarming.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, that sounds interesting. Sounds odd. I'm into that.
Yeah, I mean, you don't sound too adamant about it.
No, I'm not that adamant. Well, I guess the other big thing that week is Godzilla X Kong, The New Empire. What a shitty name for a movie.
Yeah, they really blew it. The New Empire. Like, what does that even mean? Like, these two guys are going to, like, form a new dynasty together or something?
I guess so. And why X Kong? Like, either Godzilla versus Kong or Godzilla and Kong. Why the X?
Man, if the plot line of this movie involves the construction of a new Empire State Building that they've got to do battle on top of or some shit, I'm going to be pretty pissed.
That's understandable. Yeah, I don't like any of these new Godzilla and King Kong movies, so I probably will not like this, but Rebecca Hall's in it, so I'll be seeing it. I'll be there day one.
Yeah, I mean, kaijus are in it, so I'll go see it and enjoy it for that, but I don't expect very much. You know, I complained about the other Godzilla movie being like too serious and kind of like a crybaby fest, but I'm sure that it will still be a much better experience than this crap that Legendary churns out, unfortunately.
Yeah, that it will. Have you seen the trailer for this?
No.
They find a whole like community of King Kongs like underground or something, and I think that they're the bad guys in the movie. So they give like Godzilla and King Kong team up to fight them, and they give Godzilla or they give King Kong like a robot arm as a weapon. It looks so bad.
Wasn't the last movie like all about they find like a dinosaur kingdom underground or something, and King Kong and Godzilla are there, maybe? I don't know. I can't even remember what the fuck happened in that last one.
Yeah, I don't know. I know they went underground. I think they fought Mechagodzilla at the end, maybe? I don't know. I have no clue.
Who knows? I just know that Jet Jaguar was not there.
That is true.
And neither was Rayman, now that I think about it.
Sadly, no. Neither was Rain Man.
No, not yet. Not until my fan edit comes out. Well, that's all the movies that are coming out in March 2024. Absolutely no other movies are coming out. Don't even look at the calendar, because we wouldn't lie to you.
Yeah. I wouldn't lie about any of this kind of stuff.
What are you most excited to see? Is it that Ghostbusters?
Probably Ghostbusters. Or the talk show possession movie.
Yeah, that talk show possession movie could be, you know, a sneaky classic. I could see that coming out and people being like, oh, I wasn't expecting it, but this is something real special.
Yeah. Well, speaking of special, do you want to check in with some of the listeners out there in Junk Food Dinner Land?
I'm a pervert. Yeah.
that's my way of saying yes.
Okay. Well, here's the first one. It's from somebody we know and love.
Live from New York, it's Mr. Brian. Mr. Ladies and gentlemen, Brian.
What is up, my friend? Mr. Brian calling in New York. Just to clarify on the paint problem with my car. It's not my whole car that the paint was peeling off. It was in the tailgate area that meets the roof. So 1 week later, my car has been repaired. But comes back to me with more damage than it left with. Not only did these motherfuckers scratch my car.
What?
On the right-hand side of the vehicle. But I have more paint peeling around my gas tank area. So, RIP my car, because I found these issues. More problems came back to me than I gave them to Honda with to get it repaired. It's all getting fixed. Those issues are not going to cost me anything, but now I got to look for a new car. So, I just wanted to clarify the situation. And I guess Kevin Moss doesn't go on the Discord that much, because he would have seen the video I posted about it.
Oh.
But hope you guys are better than me. Hope everybody's well. I sound out of breath. I'm sorry. It's 65 degrees on Sunday, and I'm on mile 3 of my 4-mile walk. So hope everybody's well. Take care. Thanks for taking my call. Love the show. Peace.
Son of a bitch.
Thank you for calling in, Mr. Brian. How are you going on these long walks? I try to go for walks, and it's like I get like 700 feet away from my house. I'm like, oh, I got to turn back, like, because I've got work to do, or like I'm getting sleepy, or like there's some TV show I want to watch. Like, I feel like there's not enough hours in the day to go walking.
Well, I think somebody's privilege is showing, Bowman. The privilege of a man with a fully painted automobile.
Well, I guess you're right.
You understand, Brian's got no choice out there. It's either walk or roll through town in a car with chipped paint.
Well, I guess you're right. I guess I was ignoring the part that it was like mandatory and against his will. But other people out there, they're walking. I listen to a podcast this guy talks about. He's walking 12 miles a day. How you doing this? Where you get this time?
Yeah. Well, speaking of walking, you going to see that Dune 2?
Probably going to walk to the theater to see Dune 2.
You got to see it. You got to see it. You're going to love it.
I don't understand why Mr. Brian won't just walk to Cincinnati and hang out with us. That seems like a good... If you're going to walk for any reason, it should be to go to Cincinnati and hang out. Spookies.
I think he said, 4 miles? He's probably already halfway there.
Yeah. Can't be that far.
Yeah. At this point, it would probably take more effort to turn around and go home. Just keep walking. He'll be at the Esquire. He'll be watching Spookies.
Yeah.
By the way, we should actually include that in our list of movies that are playing in theaters in the month of March, right? Do you want to use opportunity?
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. Spookies, the classic film, one of my favorite movies, a longtime childhood favorite that we talked about on Junk Food Dinner number 10. The episode where Mark, Kevin, and I got together at Kevin's house for the big junk food dinner party. We watched it there. We talked about it for that episode. It's near and dear to all of our hearts.
Who was the source of this videotape?
That's a good question at the time, because it was not on DVD or Blu-ray at the time. So it probably was just some weird bootleg videotape that we watched it on. It's going to be screening March 22nd at 11 p.m. at the Esquire Theater in Cincinnati, Ohio. Kevin and I will be there. Justin, friend of the show, is kind enough to facilitate all of this and help make our dreams come true. It's going to be fun. Hopefully we'll have a packed house full of junkies screaming and hollering for all the spookies. So everybody should come out and see that.
Oh, no. And just guys being dudes?
Well, yeah. And then we're going to be hanging around the Horror Hound Convention in Sharonville, which is right outside of Cincinnati, for the whole rest of the weekend. So it's going to be a big American party. But mostly come out and see Spookies. Tickets are on sale now. The link is out there. It's in the Discord. It's on our Facebook, I think. You can find it.
See Spookies. See lovely Sharonville. You know, your friends are going to be jealous if you post. They're going to have that FOMO that you were in Sharonville and they weren't.
That's true. There is a pretty good Waffle House in Sharonville. I learned last time that we went. So I'm excited for that. There's no Waffle Houses out here on the West Coast. So I'm going to be eating there. I'm going to be eating at Skyline. It's going to be pretty delightful.
What's your Waffle House order? Are you getting these guys chopped and screwed and flipped and fried and fiddled? And what kind of waffle are you doing?
I like them chunked, which is like little ham chunks in your hash browns, and covered. Sure.
Covered with gravy cheese. Cheese.
They have like the wording is very specific. I worked there for like one summer, and like the wording is very specific. Like you have to shout it out to like the cook in like a very specific way. And sometimes I like chili on top, but not all the time. But my main thing that I liked, that when I worked there, I would always make for myself. And then now that I like anytime I try to like order it after having worked there, nobody ever fucking makes it right. But I would make a waffle, and after pouring the waffle batter into the waffle iron, I would then pour ham cubes, ham chunks into the batter, and then make a waffle that has ham inside of it. And it was fucking delicious.
I like this. I feel like I've seen that, you know, in more recent years with like bacon bits. But yeah, you might have been an innovator back then to be putting ham into your waffle.
I think so. But anytime I've like tried to order it afterwards, I'll be like, hey, can you put the ham inside the waffle and do the whole thing? Every single time I've ordered this, they just bring me ham on top of the waffle. And it's like, this is not the fucking same. Not the same.
I've got a Waffle House hot take, which is, you know, I do love Waffle House. I didn't grow up with it. They don't have it in Massachusetts. But I had it, you know, when I lived in Tennessee briefly. And I've had it anytime I go through Arizona, I try and get it. And while I love it and I love their waffles, I don't know that I am convinced that waffle batter is a substitute for, like, the egg of an omelet. You know what I mean? It's like, cheese and chili and ham and stuff, this is all well and good in an omelet, but do I need it with my waffle? Which I kind of just want my waffle to be like a maple syrup delivery mechanism, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, you can certainly do that. There's no law saying you need any crazy stuff in your waffle. You can just get a normal waffle.
Yeah, I think I'm doing hash browns with cheese and ham on it maybe when I'm at Waffle House.
That's the way to go.
Yeah.
And you've also got to get that raisin toast. That shit is delicious.
Oh, that sounds real good.
Mm-hmm. It's a good place. Speaking of stuff that's real good, we got another caller.
Oh.
Please welcome
Leah Sweet.
Man. You're so sweet. You're so sweet.
Every time I try to think of that song, "You'll Be in My Heart," I think that's the one from the Tarzan movie by Phil Collins. I can't remember how it goes, and I just end up thinking of the theme song to Growing Pains.
All right. Thank you, Mia.
Okay.
Is that the song? That Tarzan song, is that the song that beat South Park for the Grammy for like best song? And that's why they, Trey Parker and Matt Stone, made fun of Phil Collins for years and years and years on South Park? Is that correct, Sean?
Like you're not very familiar with this Phil Collins song when we all know that you listen to the Beetlejuice soundtrack every day.
You got me there. You did get me there.
I don't remember that. Was that the Oscars that Matt and Trey went to on acid, famously?
I think so. Yeah, I think that would have been the year that, yeah, South Park was up for those awards, or at least one award.
Well, you know, that's cool. I guess, you know, they probably had a good time at the Oscars, despite losing to Phil Collins.
Yeah. Well, someone else had a good time at the Oscars, and that is the cast and crew of the 1972 film Cabaret, which we're going to be talking about in just a moment after we take a quick break. Although I do want to mention that if you want to send us a voicemail, please do so by calling 347-746-JUNK. That's 347-746-5865. Let us know how you're doing. Let us know what's going on with your car. Do you walk? How often do you walk and how long? I mean, aren't you worried that like your dogs are like tearing up the trash while you're not at home? I would be worried about
that.
What
kind of dog you got, bro?
What kind of dog you got? Let us know about that too. So we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about the Cabaret. Stick around.
Do you like to relax during entertainment? Then come to Cincinnati and relax with your JFD boys. At 11 p.m., Friday, March 22nd, JFD and Outer Cinema will be hosting a screening of the JFD classic, Spookies, at the Esquire Theater. Come see exploding reapers, farting mummies, sexy spiders, and all the other spookies on the big screen with at least two-thirds of the JFD hosts live and in person. The boys will also be hanging around the Horror Hound convention all weekend long, so come say hi and share a Skyline chili dog with the boys.
This was Germany in the early 30s.
Hello, stranger.
Full of life and love.
Meine Damen und Herren, Mesdames et Messieurs, Ladies und Gentlemen, Fräulein Sally Bowles!
This was Sally Bowles in the early 30s.
Oh, I dash all day and I work late at the cabaret.
Full of life.
I love parties. Doesn't my body drive you wild with desire?
And love.
Oh, Brad.
A special girl.
I'm gonna be a great film star. That is if booze and sex don't get me first.
On the brink of something fantastic.
I mean, it would be funny, wouldn't it, if he asked me to become the next Baroness von Hoyne in Regensburg?
And frightening.
I'm Sally Bowles.
I'm Brian Roberts.
And I have this strange, mystical, faddish feeling about you. So you're moving right in, okay? Okay?
Have you ever slept with a dwarf? Once, but it wasn't a lasting relationship.
Do you sleep with girls or don't you?
Sally, you don't ask questions like that.
I do. The poor man. He tries to love me. I may have my tiny faults.
God damn it, I'm gonna have a baby!
Sally is rather knowledgeable in these areas.
Does it really matter as long as you're having fun?
What good is sitting all alone in your room? Come, hear the music play. Life is a cabaret, old chum. Come to the cabaret. Start by admitting from cradle to tomb, it isn't that long a stay. Life is a cabaret, old chum. It's only a cabaret, old chum. And I love a cabaret.
Welcome back to Junk Food Supper. The movie we are doing this week is Cabaret from 1972, directed by Bob Fosse, who also directed Lenny. That movie about, Carl Carlson's best friend on The Simpsons, Star 80, and
I thought
all
it was
that
about
jazz.
Squiggy's best friend on Laverne and Shirley.
It's a movie about a lot of people's best friends, that Lenny. Yeah, but also he directed All That Jazz, which in a roundabout way is why I picked this. It's Musical March. At least that's what I'm doing. I'm picking a bunch of musicals this month. And Sean, a while back, you told me that I would like All That Jazz. Friend of the show, Justin, said I would like All That Jazz. And I said, well, I can't possibly watch All That Jazz without first having seen Cabaret, because it came out 7 years before. So I decided we start here with Cabaret. And yeah, I saw, like, I'm a little bit familiar with Cabaret, but not really. I'm a little familiar with Bob Fosse, but not.
Well, also directed Star 80, we should mention, which, have we done that on the show yet? That's a very JFD movie.
We have not, no, but I've heard it's good. I've not seen that one either.
Yeah, well, we'll do it someday.
Perfect. Yeah, I've seen, like, on all the dancing shows I watch, you know, So You Think You Can Dances and stuff. Like, it feels like they're always doing tributes to Bob Fosse, and I've seen clips of Cabaret and stuff like that. So, like, I've always been interested. Seems like a very interesting dude. Seems like he knows what he's talking about. I've seen Chicago. I think he did the choreography for that. Maybe even the music. He was involved in some capacity.
Along with Bob Mackie, I would say he's a top-tier Bob in the world of musicals.
I think you're probably right. So yeah, so he directed this. This is based on a live stage show musical, which was based on a novel about the Nazis taking over Berlin. And that's where we find ourselves at the beginning of this movie, inside the Kit Kat Club in 1931 Berlin. Liza Minnelli plays Sally Bowles, who is a young hep cat performer who performs at this seedy kind of a bar, and she's living a lavish life. She's a very promiscuous lady. She likes to booze it up. She's having fun, you know, having fun the way that you might in a country that is freewheeling. In those years between World War I and World War II, where you are freewheeling and having fun. Michael York shows up. He plays a guy named Brian.
Which, by the way, did anybody else think that it was amusing that at the Kit Kat Club we've got a York Peppermint Patty type character going on? Who's next? We're going to cast Reese's Witherspoon or what's going on?
Oh, this is absurd. All right, you're going crazy. That actually, they should have cast Barbara Hershey, if you ask me.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Michael York, I did not realize that he did movies that were not Austin Powers movies. So this is very interesting to see him in a real movie.
They also could have cast Eminem.
You know? Yeah, that's true. Yeah, he would have done pretty well.
A bit young at the time, but still.
Yeah. We actually talked about Michael York when we did The Island of Dr. Moreau from 1977, a million years ago on the show. He's pretty good. He comes to town. He's a British fellow. He meets
pretty Liza good, you say, about the most British man you've ever encountered?
He's pretty good in this movie.
Okay, I just didn't expect to hear it coming from you.
I like him in general. I like him in the Austin Powerses. He's good in those two, where he plays Basil Exposition, I believe is his name.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, he comes to town. He moves in to the same sort of like flop house, I guess, as Liza Minnelli, and they form a friendship and perhaps a little bit of a romantic liaison. It's very cool. Voom. His character, Va-va-voom. I was shocked that in 1972, a guy is just openly talking about being bisexual. Like, I said, I did not know that this was a thing at the time where you could openly talk about that. But here, I guess in 1972, they were. I was pretty flabbergasted by that.
Well, and I think that is probably the primary reason that this movie was rated X on its initial release, because, you know, there's like no violence in this whatsoever. And there's, I don't think, any nudity at all either. I think it's just the fact that there's an openly gay character makes this an X-rated movie.
Yeah, yeah. It's that, and then they talk openly about abortion, and like they kind of talk openly about sex, and that's pretty much it. And I mean, I guess like maybe the Nazi stuff, but that's.
But for context, I mean, 1972, Deep Throat is in theaters. Like people go out to see pornos in cinemas in 72. So like, presumably you could have made the mistake of going out thinking that you're going to see Linda Lovelace or something. You end up with Liza Minnelli.
Yeah, true. Yeah. If you wanted to go see a porno movie and you walked into Cabaret, you'd probably be pretty upset. I mean, maybe not too upset because it's a pretty entertaining movie, but
yeah, unless you got a real mud wrestling fetish, then I guess you would have been satisfied for at least those couple minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So those folks are here. We've also got Joel Grey, who plays the master of ceremonies at the Kit Kat Club. And the only time we ever see him is when he's performing. I don't think he has really much in the way of like actual narrative importance. Like we pretty much only see him on stage. And I like this guy a lot. He played a small but pivotal role in like two or three episodes of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. So that's like the only thing I've ever seen him in. So it's cool to see him in this. He won an Oscar for this, as did Liza Minnelli and Bob Fosse.
Did you notice on Wikipedia they mentioned the original guy that they cast in that role? I thought it was kind of weird. Babe Ruth, just for his candy bar name. I'm like, I'm thinking 72. Is he even alive, you guys?
Oh, my goodness. This is absurd. All right. So, yeah. So the film kind of follows the friendship that blossoms between Sally and Brian and the goings on at the Kit Kat Club during the days as the Nazis are kind of rising to power in Berlin. And I don't know. I mean, it's a little plotless, like outside of like this very heavy plot that's going on in the background, which is a thing that I think is like super interesting about this movie is like, we're just following like these kind of two slacker types as they hang around a bar and like kind of, you know, get into like kinky threesomes and kind of, you know, just live this kind of silly life in Berlin. But in the background, Nazis are rising to power. We don't, you know, it's like kind of just on the fringes of the frame. And we meet these two characters. What are their names? I forget their names. Fritz, maybe. Who is this son of a bitch? God damn it. Yeah, Fritz and Natalia, Fritz is a Jew who is trying to play it off like he's not a Jew because, you know, he sees the rising kind of, you know, environment. And they're trying to find a way to get married and then move to America to get away from all this stuff. And like, that's also kind of happening in the background. So like, I feel like a more conventional story would, you know, be their story. And I think the genius of this movie is that we're getting all that stuff in the background, because that's the way that these characters are kind of looking at everything. Like they're more wrapped up in like they're boozing and drinking and hanging out at the Kit Kat Club. Like they're not really too concerned that Nazis are rising to power. Like they're pretty apathetic about it. They're a little unconcerned as long as they get to keep doing what they're doing. To a fatal end, spoiler alert, or possibly fatal end, I guess. You should probably go see this movie. Maybe I'm the last person on earth who hasn't seen this movie, so maybe everybody else already has, but we're probably going to spoil some stuff. And yeah, so like the Kit Kat Club stuff, I don't know, like you've seen this movie before, right, Sean? Before we get into like every single thing, you've seen this, you like this?
Yeah, I've seen Cabaret.
Okay, all right. You enjoy Cabaret, would you say?
I enjoy Cabaret, I would say.
All right, just making sure. Yeah, so some of these musical numbers are really... All right, I'm just going to spoil the ending because the ending's the best thing. I saw the ending a million years ago when I was taking a film class. Like the teacher was like, this is how you do a fucking ending where you just show, you know, have visual information. So at the end, we're seeing like this great performance by Liza Minnelli, and then the camera just kind of pans around the room, and it's full of fucking Nazis. All these Nazis in the room. The whole time we're watching this movie, we think, you know, that the people in the cabaret are like the cool fringe people who would like stand up to the Nazis and stuff. Like because we're seeing a lot of like, a lot of the performances are sort of like anti-Nazi. They're kind of satirical of the Nazis, goofing on them a little bit. And so we kind of get the idea that the cool people are at the cabaret. But by the time the movie ends, and maybe at the beginning they were, and in fact, they probably were. But by the end, Nazis have taken over the cabaret, and it makes you really second guess everything. Like, there are some musical numbers in here that are, they seem at the beginning very plainly satirical, where like, you know, like the performers are like dressed as Nazis, but they're also dressed as like women Nazis. And they're kind of, it seems like they're making fun of the Nazis. And like, there's another one where like a guy's dancing around with a gorilla and, you know, it seems like they're making fun of the Nazis with that performance. But then, because like the gorilla is alluded to as being like Jewish or something like that. But by the end, it's like, well, I'm sitting here in this audience with all these Nazis. Maybe the whole time it was, they weren't being satirical. They were being serious. Like, maybe, yeah, they were just kind of going along, these performers. Like, they saw the rising tide and decided to just join the Nazis or something. Maybe that's what's going on. Either way, I'm sitting here in an audience with Nazis. I'm uncomfortable about it. I think it's just a really spectacular ending to the movie. I like the musical numbers. The song about money is very fun. The cabaret song is amazing.
That song about money, famously sampled on the Avalanche's record "Since I Left You." The part at the beginning where they both say money, that gets sampled. So look for that.
Okay. Well, I'll have to check that out. I'm writing it down right now. The Avalanche.
The Avalanche is "Since I Left You." It's, you got an hour's worth of music videos on our Junk Food Dinner YouTube channel that I created for it. So go watch those.
Okay, I will. Yeah, so I'd never seen this movie before outside of that ending. And it's very good. It's like, it's so good that I kind of feel bad that this is my first time watching it. Because I feel like in 3 months, when I watch this movie like 4 more times, I'll have a lot more to say about it, because it's like just so overwhelming with everything that's in it. Like, there's a lot of themes. There's like, you know, I mean, obviously all the Nazi stuff and like kind of how apathy like is not the answer to the rise of Nazism. And also, and I mean, like, that's a lot of it, is like these people are sort of apathetic towards the rise of Nazism, but I feel like they're also to a certain degree fighting back the only way that they know how to, which is by partying and dancing. You know, like, sometimes I mean, art, even very benign art, I think can be an act of rebellion. Or maybe not, because possibly they were just appeasing the Nazis the whole time or something. I don't know.
Well, and this movie has that kind of interesting, you know, 1970s thing where it feels like the filmmakers are basically saying, we're not going to make any bullshit anymore. You know, like the 50s and the 60s, those were the decades for bullshit movies. But this is the 70s and we're taking the gloves off, and, you know, it's going to be real talk. And so it's, you know, it's interesting to see a movie that takes that kind of approach to, you know, making a musical wherein the focus is these characters who are caught up in, you know, this kind of silly nonsense cabaret world where there's real world shit going on, you know, clearly right at their doorstep.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And yeah, I think one way that they do that Bob Fosse kind of changes this is like, I think in the original stage show, it's a lot more musically, like people break out into the songs and like, that's how they converse and like share their feelings and stuff, like a traditional musical. And that's not how any of the songs work in this. Everything, all the musical numbers, rather than, you know, taking place like in real life or whatever, they all take place on stage. And so I think that, yeah, kind of taking out that magical realism of the musical does kind of make the movie, like the themes of the movie, a little bit more in your face and plainly out there, like you were saying. I think that's a really interesting choice. Although there is one musical number in this, the only time, I think it's the only time that there's a musical number not on the stage at the Kit Kat Club. And it's when a bunch of Hitler youth are at a picnic and singing about how they're going to take over the world. And they're doing it. It's like a lot of this movie is like really dark because they're hanging out and like in clubs and at night and stuff. And this is like shot nicely and it's a very warm looking and they're outside and it looks very friendly. But the Nazis are singing about taking over the world. And it's that juxtaposition is like so fucking scary, you know, because it's like, I don't know, just like it's all out in the day, all out in the daylight, like these Nazis just singing about taking over the world. Very harrowing, very scary.
It's done. They do it in such a way where, you know, if you removed the Hitler Youth costumes from these kids and they were just regular kids singing the song, it would take on a completely different meaning. Because I think the song just says something like the future is ours or something like this. Yeah. And for, you know, just regular kid, you're like, okay, yeah, this makes sense. Okay. Looking forward to, you know, the future. But then when you know what that means, yeah, it's much more chilling.
Yeah. I can imagine like showing this to like a 20-year-old who may not have, you know, a grasp of like what World War II was necessarily. And them not thinking anything of it and them being like, oh, yeah, that was like an uplifting song. Because, yeah, like it could just be, if you take the Nazism out or if you don't know necessarily that these people are Nazis, because they're not, I mean, Hitler's not there with them and they're not wearing like, you know, those fucking metal helmets with the spikes or anything like that. So, like, yeah, if you weren't like aware, you would think it's like very wholesome. And I think that got this movie into trouble, like people who misunderstanding and thinking that scene was like somehow supposed to like show Nazis in a good light, which is like very clearly not, I don't think. But I think, you know, it's the juxtaposition there and is what's so scary about it. And I think that, yeah, it would be easy to read it as wholesome, I guess, which some people did. Which is, I guess, scary in itself. But that's the point of the scene. So yeah, I don't know. I love this. I think this is wonderful. But what do you think, Sean? How much do you like Cabaret?
Well, I wish personally that somebody had sat me down as a child and forced me to watch this movie, you know, because I think it might have opened up my concept of what a musical could be earlier on in my life, you know. Granted, you know, this is not exactly an easy sell for a kid. A musical about Nazi Germany that is not an over-the-top producers-style gag fest, you know. And, you know, especially you throw Michael York into the mix, and I feel like it's no surprise that young Sean Byron ran away from Cabaret, you know, running and screaming. But I did end up catching this a few years ago during the pandemic. And I loved it. I mean, how could I not love a movie where you got half-naked Nazi men in women's lingerie goose-stepping their way through a drag routine? I mean, that's that's right up my alley. but I think part of my enjoyment was just based on my timing being pretty good. You know, I grew up not knowing really anything about musicals. And then early in the pandemic, I started getting into those Fred Astaire pictures. And then I, you know, worked my way through a bunch of 1940s and 50s musicals. Ended up seeing a decent number of Judy Garland flicks in that time. And then at that point, after having seen all that stuff and having gotten a little bored of 1950s musicals that get, you know, kind of repetitive and stale after a while, they are all sort of the same, cut from a, you know, a very narrow template. At that point, I watched this and, you know, the contrast between those, you know, the old timey kind of ham-fisted musicals. And this, you know, I think was part of the reason why it appealed to me so much. And I think this movie still feels like it's ahead of its time. You know, 1972 is pretty early, I think, for a movie like this to come out. You know, even having watched it fairly recently, if you had asked me when this came out, I probably would have said mid-70s, not 72, because to me, this feels like it is kind of setting the template, I guess, for what 1970s musicals would become. And the fact that they were able to, you know, be so distinctly different from the 1960s, just a couple years into this decade, I think is pretty impressive. But it, you know, it's a movie that's old school in other ways. As you mentioned, a lot of this is just kind of a variety show in movie form, all this Kit Kat Club stuff, which is something that you see in a lot of like the burlesque variety show type movies from the 40s. So, you know, things like Ziegfeld Follies have that kind of a vibe. But I like that. You know, I've always found those kind of variety show movies are a lot of fun because, you know, if things get kind of slow with the main story, you have a reason to cut to this song and dance number, or, you know, stand-up routine, or strip show type routine, or you know, a gorilla dancing with a Nazi, or you know, what have you. And in this movie, you know, it's a fun way for us to get to hang out with Joel Grey, who is as good in this movie as everybody tells you. He's fucking awesome in this. I don't think anybody else on the planet could have sprayed seltzer water on those mud wrestling ladies with the amount of glee that this man has.
Mm-hmm.
And it does make you wonder why nobody ever made a gay Dracula movie with him. You know, there are gay Dracula movies out there. To my knowledge, Joel Grey didn't appear in any of them, but I think he would have been fucking awesome as a gay Dracula. And it, yeah, I mean, those nightclub scenes also just look cool. I like the way that they shot them. You know, they're like really like dark, and they got that high ISO film where, you know, it's kind of grainy, but it looks cool at the same time. I love Liza's hair and makeup in this. I guess she based it on the silent screen queen Louise Brooks, who actually was one of the interview subjects in that 1980 Hollywood documentary that I saw on YouTube in the past year. That's all about silent screen stars. And she's cool, Louise Brooks. And I think you do have to credit, you know, at least 10% of this movie's success to that cool haircut and the cool eyelashes that Liza rocks. I think it is such a big part of this movie is how fucking cool she looks. And, you know, the casting of her obviously was done for, you know, familial reasons. The fact that both of her parents were so intrinsically tied to the history of movie musicals makes this kind of also a fun watch, just kind of threading, you know, the history together in that way. So, yeah, I really like this a lot. You know, I don't know if it's really fair to call this like a repudiation of traditional Hollywood musicals, because I suspect that Bob Fosse did like the old school musicals. It's probably part of the reason he was drawn to this project, but probably just wanted to do something kind of new with that format. But yeah, I'm glad that he did, because as much as I do like the old school musicals where things are just kind of fluff and nonsense, I think it's badass that he was able to tackle some, you know, real world issues and do it with a sense of style and not pull any punches here. I think that's pretty awesome. So not a movie that I get excited to watch, you know, because it is kind of downbeat, you know, with all these Nazis goose-stepping around, but not too downbeat because a lot of them are wearing lingerie at the time. So if you have not seen Cabaret, I think you got to see Cabaret. And I'm glad that you picked it.
I'm glad to hear it. Don't be like me. Don't wait forever to see this because, yeah, this is really good. But what about next week? What are we going to be talking about next week, Sean Byron?
Well, next week, I think we should stick with the March-usicle. I was about to say May-usicle, but that's not what month we're in. Stick with this March-usicle theme, and probably we should watch Strike Me Pink.
Strike Me Pink. What can you tell me about this movie I've never heard of?
You know all about Strike Me Pink. You've heard the Beetlejuice soundtrack.
Oh, okay. It's the Shake Sonora movie. I get it.
Exactly. No, I mean, I picked this mostly because I know that you're such a huge fan of Eddie Cantor. You know Eddie Cantor. Old Saucer Eyes, they called him.
I can't or say that I know the man.
Oh, well, he's old Saucer Eyes. He's, you know, he's one of my favorite early screen comedians. For my money, I think he's better than any of the Marx Brothers, but I'll probably be laughed out of film-going circles for even suggesting that. But old-timey comedian dude, made a string of pictures. Most of them do have blackface in them. I can't remember if this one does. If it does, I apologize.
Oh my goodness.
But they are funny musicals that the man made, and this one is from 1936. A time that you might be surprised to find out had music. Music had been invented by 36, but so they were able to feature it in this. But yeah, it's a fun one.
Okay. I'm in.
I think it's on Canopy, maybe, and it's probably on YouTube for free, or it's got to certainly be on Tubi or something. This is not a high demand kind of movie where people would even prevent you from streaming it. I'm sure nobody gets paid when you stream Strike Me Pink.
It is available for renting on YouTube, Apple TV, and Amazon Prime at the very least.
And probably somewhere else for free, I'm guessing.
It's out there. All right. Perfect. Perfect. We'll be watching that next time. I guess that brings us to the end of the show, though. So send us some voicemails, 347-746-JUNK. Let us know if you're coming out to the goddamn Horror Hound Convention, JFD Meetup, Spookies Extravaganza. We've been talking in the Discord, so I know of some folks. Maybe you're out there, maybe you're coming, but you're not in the Discord. Let us know. We got to know who all is coming, you know? Otherwise, we'll be scared and afraid. We'll be anxious, thinking that people are going to be approaching us in a dark alley. So let us know. You know, go to the Patreon if you like us, if you like supporting us, or if you like supporting Twin Peaks, patreon.com/junkfooddinner. And if you give us a couple of dollars, you can listen to us talk about every episode of Twin Peaks ever, all of season one, all of season two, all of season three. All the movies.
I like it a great deal.
All the soundtracks. We're talking about all the Twin Peaks. So check that out. I guess that's everything, right? Twitter. Find us in the Discord. Join the music thing we're doing. I forget the name of it. The Music League. Join that.
No.
All right, don't join. There's only two slots left, so maybe you don't even have enough room to join. Maybe you're not in.
All these kids are pieces of shit.
You know, it is a little disheartening, though, because I think that me and you and Kevin are in the last three places. We're losing after this first round. It's very... We can't lose in our own podcast league. It's embarrassing.
It goes back to what I was saying before. You know, I'm trying to follow my heart over here and not just, you know, try to placate the masses, but maybe I should go for what's popular and, you know, pick something that everybody's heard, like off the Beetlejuice soundtrack.
Everybody has heard that. Yeah. You gotta rig it next time. Like make all the categories like Calypso based. So you can really stack the deck with that Beetlejuice soundtrack.
Flex my knowledge of Lord Invader, another Calypso artist from the 50s that nobody cares about.
Well, yeah. So yeah, until next time, this is Parker for Sean Byron saying thanks for having fun.